thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
Siakam drives, gets past Green, throws it up and in. Pascal Siakam makes it a three-point game. Or throws it ahead to Green. Green surrounded by Draymond Green and throws it away. Iguodala throws it to Green, who catches it back to Curry, puts up a three. Won't go. Rebound Cousins, deflected, picked up by Leonard. Ball still loose. They dive on it and try and call time, and a timeout call.
So it's a technical foul.
They had no timeouts remaining, so a technical foul will be called on Golden State. Throws it into Leonard. That's it. It's over. The Raptors win.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. That was the Toronto Raptors. There's always a little ignorant dude messing up the show. Come on, cuz. You listen to the Urban Sports Scene with Wally, Will, T, and Ray. Toronto Raptors winning it all, beating the Golden State Warriors in six. What's going on, Will T?
Van Fleet!
Never on time, always late.
I just signed the Dazzin. Wally called it Dazzin. Are you signing the Dazzin?
Something Dazzin? What's it supposed to be? The Zone?
It's the Zone. Exactly. The Zone. You going to sign with Dazzin? Yeah, we signed, baby. We are with Dazzin, homie.
I hung up on him.
By accident.
Who you hung up
on? My boy Ed.
Oh, okay.
You take that. You take the lead while I call it. Take the lead, Ray.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Tuesday. Live, 8 p.m. NBA Finals ended in the past week, and nobody here really picked the Raptors from the start of the season, of course. I picked them in seven. I thought it was going to go seven. Of course it would have if Klay didn't get hurt. Not saying the Warriors would have won the series, but it was going to go seven if Klay had gone down. But you know what? Kawhi was the best player in the playoffs. I'm happy for the Raptors. He was the best player in the playoffs.
Van Fleet was the best player in the playoffs.
Hey, you are a Van Fleet fan. You know what? But you sold your boy out when the Raptors played the Bucks.
All right, man. Anyway, subscribe to
sold him out.
You ain't lying. Subscribe to
you
our
was a Bledsoe groupie at the time.
subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join me on Sunday, August 4th at Bowie Bay Sox Stadium for the first annual celebrity kickball game in honor of a close friend of mine, Barry Sharp, and all affected by mental illness and suicide. This game will include former NFL players Santana Moss, Lee Bowden, and Vasante Shenko. The kickball game will be after the Bowie Bay Sox game. The Bowie Bay Sox game is at 1:35 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can get your tickets at www.rootmatics.events/event/Lawrence Law. Will T.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
My man.
Van Fleet.
We'll talk about the Toronto Raptors defeating the Golden State Warriors in the NBA Finals. Former NBA baller Eddie Bastin will join us to discuss this at 8:20. We'll talk about the Wizards' possible pursuit of Raptors president Masai Ujiri.
There is no pursuit.
It's a pursuit.
It's a rap. He's not coming.
Well, where'd you get that from? Man, Woj dropped the bomb. I don't believe anybody.
Because of a potential tampering charge.
When it comes to any sources, when it comes to the Wizards and sources, Candace Buckner says it. I believe Candace Buckner.
All right. We'll discuss that later.
You're not part of the media. That's why you all Candace Buckner.
I know.
You don't see her.
You don't see it, bro. At 8:30, we'll talk about the Lakers acquiring Anthony Davis. At 8:40, we'll talk about Thursday's NBA draft.
Shout out to Lake. Shout out to the media folks who
I know, right? I know, right? Finally, at 8:50, host of the Quarterly Report podcast, Armon Lee, will join the show to talk boxing, Tyson Fury defeating Tom Schwartz on Saturday, and a possible Danny Garcia, Mikey Garcia fight at 147. But first, right now, we have former NBA baller and the homie, Eddie Bastin, on the line. Hey, Eddie, what's going on, my man?
What's going on, fellas? How y'all doing?
Yeah, because I don't know what I wrote.
Chillin', what's up, man?
What's going on, Ed, man? Hey, Ed, before we get into it, I want you to tell the folks out there how wet my jumper was when we were kids, man.
How wet your jumper was?
Repeat that again.
All right, before we continue. Before we get into basketball, let these folks know how wet my jumper was when we were kids. Let these folks know.
I don't know if it was you and your brother, man.
Oh, that's where we going?
I think your brother, man, had to set up jump shot.
Oh, you dirty as hell know it right now.
No. You can knock it down though, but you know, it was in y'all DNA, man. Y'all both had some nice shots, man, but your brother, man, he was the one, man.
Oh man, don't slice Al. You know how Al is. Don't do that.
hey, I can only speak to how Al look now. He don't look like he knocking down nothing. But sandwiches.
Yeah.
Hey, man. Ed, if y'all don't know, Ed went to, Roosevelt, played for the Bulls as well. Ed, we all grew up in Spring Hill Lake together. But, Ed, what's going on? What's going on with you, my man?
Man, not too much, man. You know, just got back to the area, man. And since being back to the area, just been tapping in with the youth.
Mm-hmm.
And started training, you know, a few kids here and there, just trying to see where, you know, this transition will be like, you know, after basketball. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just pretty much trying to figure out the next move and, you know, just look forward to giving back, man, and working with a lot of, you know, guys in the sports business right now. So, you know, that's pretty much it.
So how was your experience doing the 3-on-3 Ice Cube's event?
Man, the Big Three, man, was a heck of an experience, man, and you know, something new, something innovative that Ice Cube and his partner Jeff put together. And at the end of the day, man, it's basketball, man. Mm-hmm. For the people out there that have been doubting it a little bit, and for the people that's been watching it, you know, it's definitely a very competitive league. And you know, 3-on-3, man, you out there on the island, man.
Yeah, man.
So you got to be able to play both sides of the ball. You got to have some game because mm-hmm. a lot of one-on-one situations. And then on defense, you just got to be able to strap up. So super competitive, super fun. And, you know, as y'all see, man, the rosters each year keep getting better and better. You know, guys still got a lot in the tank. And, you know, unfortunately, I'm not playing this year. And the first year when I played, man, we made it to the championship, man. We ended up losing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a heck of a run, heck of a ride, man. So, you know, I look forward to getting back to it, you know, in the summers to come. And y'all could all tune in, man. The first week starts this weekend. I think they're in Detroit Saturday. So, you know, tune in.
Hey, we had Mike Sweetney on the show months ago. And, you know, he participated in the Big Three as well. He said it could be an avenue for players to return to the NBA, those who maybe weren't picked up and left via free agency or whatever. You feel like it could be that significant where people could restart their NBA careers after a stint in the Big Three?
Absolutely, man. One of the guys, man, a couple of guys ended up signing like 10 days and signing to play, you know, in training camp to get themselves a shot again. Xavier Silas was one of the guys that, after he played in the Big Three, he ended up in the G League. And then at the end of the season, he signed on with the Boston Celtics. And then Josh Childress, he was one of the guys that got on with, Phoenix in training camp and probably was with him for the beginning of the season. So there's definitely something that could relaunch, you know, some guys' careers, especially as the eyes start being more on the Big Threes. You know, you definitely got to take it serious and be ready with all things because, you know, it's a professional sport. And you know, we top-tier athletes no matter what, NBA or not. You know, we still all, you know, work hard and train the same way. So, you know, we put in the same kind of work in.
What's going on, Ed? This is Will. You played in the professionally in the NBA, you also play internationally. From your perspective, what's the biggest difference from some of these guys who will be drafted in this Thursday draft who play internationally coming into the NBA? What's the biggest transition for them?
The biggest transition will probably be just, you know, being in America. You know, obviously the guys that play internationally, you know, they've been playing, you know, professional basketball, you know, for some time, whether it be they started at 16 or 18, and now they're getting into the NBA. You know, it's the transition really is just probably getting used to the NBA game and just being in America and just a different lifestyle. But, you know, once they get acclimated to what's going on around them, man, as you see, a lot of the foreign guys that come over have made the success. So, you know, now it's becoming more of a norm and guys are more prepared. because they get to see what's going on with social media and things like that. You're getting to tune in, you're getting to tap in and check and see what other guys are doing and how they training, you know, regimens are. So, you know, they're kind of more prepared now than before, like with anything that's going on right now. So, you know, the biggest transition is probably just being acclimated to being in America and not being on their soil and whatnot, and then just, you know, the physicality of the game and the NBA.
You made an interesting point that I don't want to bypass. You talked about the international players playing professionally from the ages of 14, 15, 16. In the NBA, the way it's currently set up, there's a one and done rule. Do you think that for American born players that they would be able to transition and play the game at a younger age, opposed to having to go through high school to play in the NBA?
That's a rare situation right there, because I feel like overseas, you know, those guys are, you know, trained at an early age to play in their professional league. So they're getting a lot of, you know, experience early on, whether it be overseas. You know, most guys, they got their main team, and then they might have a junior team. And then the top guys on the junior team, they come and practice with the main team. And some guys get to play. So right there, that's developing them while they're playing with men at the age of 14, 15, 16, whether it be just practice or, you know, real game live situation. In America, you know, at 14, 15, 16, man, we still maturing, you know, like we still being, you know, spoon-fed. Our parents, you know, don't really hold us accountable at those ages. Well, over there, their maturity, to me, and from what I've seen, has been, you know, groomed a lot faster. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in America, we could definitely do it. Like I said, there's a lot of guys out there with a lot of talent that, if given the opportunity, you know, they could excel as well. But, you know, for the sport overall, you know, I've always been one of them guys to believe that, man, go to college, man. Get a couple years under your belt. Learn some responsibility. And you know, just learn the competitive nature of the game a little bit more on that level before you, you know, jump to the NBA. You know what I'm saying? That's just me personally. And plus, you know, it's a lot of guys in the NBA that still got a lot to give, but they've been pushed out because of the young guys coming in. You know, this thing is a revolving door. Mm-hmm. Each year you got guys coming in that's going to be pushed out. And guys that still got a lot to give to the game, unfortunately, you know, find themselves going overseas or looking for one of these new opportunities here in America. So, you know, we could talk about that all day, but that's just my take on it.
So last thing real quick before I know we got to transition to talking about the finals, but a guy like Quinn Cook, you know, he's from here, from the DMV. He refused to go overseas. He was determined to make it in the NBA and use the G League as his avenue. But you got young guys now like R.J. Hampton, Kenyon Martin Jr., of course, LaMelo Ball, who had no choice for real. But these guys are skipping college and going overseas. Which one would you recommend if you had to pick?
What, coming straight out, coming out of high school?
Or just would you recommend somebody going overseas in general? You know, would you recommend that they, you know, like you said, go to school, and if they don't get drafted, to use the G League, use that avenue versus going abroad, even though that might pay you more, especially if you're not in the NBA?
Well, you know, it just depends on your situation. You know, a lot of guys, you know, come from, you know, I'm going to say, you know, poverty backgrounds and whatnot. And, you know, they have the skill and the ability, and they know that whether they go to college or if they take the route of the G League, they know that they'll make it to the NBA, and they might, and finances might be something that's their main goal and objective. So, you know, in order to skip that, you know, college process, the G League, obviously they've been structuring things a little different for guys. So that's the avenue to take. You know, you're still here, you're playing up under an NBA franchise, so the eye is on you. You know, you still get to be seen. But going abroad as well and playing against, you know, grown men, and just expanding your horizon, that's also a good avenue. So if I was coming out of school right now, you know, depending on what I knew about, you know, playing abroad, I would probably take the G League, you know, avenue. Mm-hmm. But if I knew a little bit more about overseas and I had somebody to guide me and walk me through it, then I would definitely, you know, love to make some money. Mm-hmm. So while playing, so you know, that's how I look at that as well.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene right now. We have former NBA baller Eddie Bastin online. So Ray mentioned the NBA Finals. The Toronto Raptors defeated the Golden State Warriors 4-2 in the series to become the NBA champions. What were your thoughts of that series?
Man, well, obviously, man, both teams, man, they fought, you know, extremely hard to get to the finals. You know, unfortunately, Golden State this year around dealt with a lot of, you know, injuries throughout the series. And, you know, we got to tip our hats off to Toronto, man. Mm-hmm. They came and they played, and, you know, it wasn't pretty for them, you know, throughout the playoffs, but at the right time, the guys, they clicked, they gel well. They, you know, the chemistry, man, was just on point. Guys from Van Vliet to even Lowry stepping up big after being talked about not showing up in the previous playoffs and things like that. Serge Ibaka, you know, he came on strong. So, you know, I feel like it was a good finals. It was interesting because we never knew what the next game was going to bring. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, with the injuries and whatnot, we didn't know who was going to play. Yeah. We didn't know, you know, how things are going to play out. But, you know, unfortunately, like I said, man, Golden State caught the tough end of the stick. And, you know, Toronto handled business. You know, you got one of the top two, three players in the league, Kawhi Leonard, on the team, man. And, you know, he was hitting them silent 30s while other guys, man, was contributing big, man. And it paid off for him.
So let me ask you this. Like, you know what the game does to your body. You know the amount of effort physically you have to put into playing basketball, especially for just an 82-game season. So can you kind of describe what Golden State possibly could be feeling having went to 5 straight? LeBron went to 8 straight. I mean, can you imagine that for yourself personally, playing that much basketball in that time for in that time span?
Close enough.
Well, you know, like first you got to get through the 82-game season.
Yes, right.
And then by the time you get to the playoffs, man, everybody, you know, playing with some sort of injury, or, you know, they done had an injury that they've been nursing, or, you know, just trying to get back healthy. And, you know, at the end of the game, them guys play, they play a lot of minutes. And, you know, it does take a, you know, mm-hmm. toll on the body. After stuff had that, what was game 4? I want to say, or game
47
at home.
You mean 47?
Yeah, 47.
Yeah,
you know, that took a lot out of them.
Yeah.
You know, as we can see, and you know, as the series went on, Clay goes down, and you know, DeMarcus trying to get back in the groove. You know, Steph just never had another game like that, even though he, you know, scored his points and whatnot. But that was major for him. But with them injuries, man, you know. It's the luck of the draw, mm-hmm. you know. They Golden State has beaten teams, you yep. know, in the past years
that have also
suffered injuries, you know, to star players and key players. So, man, it's just a part of the game, man. However you look at it, you know, you got fans mm-hmm. that feel certain ways and say, "Well, yeah, Toronto had to beat a Golden State team that was, you know, injured and this, mm-hmm. that, and the third." But hey, that's the game, you know.
Yes,
and that's sports.
Definitely. So, all right, injuries, let's still play on this injury thing. Kevin Durant, if you were KD and you had that calf injury that everybody thought that could have affected your Achilles, would you have played knowing that you got that free agency right around the corner?
Nah.
See?
My man,
thank you. Get that bag. Thank you.
And I wouldn't have played, you know, for a few reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I know we all had that itch and that burn and that fire, man. This is what we love to do. We got mm-hmm. the passion. You know, we got it. It's our purpose at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we want to be out there, man. You don't know. I don't know a lot of guys that haven't played sports or that even played, you know, for recreation.
Yeah.
If you love it, you love it.
True.
Whatever you love, you want to give it your all. And if you feel like you can go out there. Because at 70%, KD could give you 30.
Yeah.
You know, and will you to a victory. So, it just was tough, man, because I just feel like any injury to the lowest to the lower extremities, especially under that calf,
mm-hmm.
you know, you got to take it real seriously. Because let's say, okay, he never came back. He waited for the summertime. He signed a max deal with whatever team, New York Knicks. But, you know, that's where I would like to see my guy. You know, but let's say he signed that max deal with New York. You know, when it's time this summer, if he didn't come back, he could have been working out, training, trying mm-hmm. to get himself back in order just for the summer,
mm-hmm.
and it could have happened then. So,
mm-hmm.
with that kind of injury, we don't know, but I would say it was, you know, probably bound to happen.
Right, that's what I thought too.
We just don't know if it would have happened, you know, if he didn't play, if it would have happened in the off season, the summer after he signed, or you know, he made the choice to get out there, man, and try to give his team a little boost, and unfortunately, man, he went down. So, you know, I know he's going to come back stronger. I know he's going to, you know, rehab and get the best treatment, you know, out there. And I just look forward to, you know, everything working out for him, man.
So, Ed, all right, real quick before I let you go, what do you think Kawhi's going? What's Kawhi going to do? He stay in Toronto or he's heading out?
Man, I think going back to the West Coast, man. I think the Clippers got a shot at him, man. Especially if the GM leaves.
Mm-hmm.
I think he came. You know, he gave the city.
Mm-hmm.
You know what they've been wanting. You know, and their first championship ever. So you know, I think that's big. But you know, that's a decision he got to sit back and watch. But you know. Kawhi, man, he's a different kind of guy, and I think being home, you know, is ultimately something that, you know, a challenge that he would love to take on.
Mm.
Man, he done won with the Spurs, he done won with Toronto, he go to Clippers, you know, he get a good team around him, he mess around and win one in L.A. as a Clipper.
That'd be crazy.
And he'll be one of the first star players to go to every team that he's been to. And do that. So, you know, that's something in the back of his mind, I'm sure. Like, man, I could be the first one to do this in history.
Mm.
And, you know, it'll be fun. It'll be interesting, man, having him and LeBron in the same building with different uniforms on and the same conference, you know, just going at it
mm.
eight times a year, man. I would love to see that.
Definitely. Hey, Ed, man, you know, I appreciate you, my man. Thanks for being on.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. And, you know, we'll talk, man. Y'all keep it up, man. And I keep tuning in, all right?
All right, my man.
All right.
That's my man, Ed Basson, former NBA player. He talked about Masai Ujiri. The Wizards are in play to get him.
No, they aren't. Never were.
You listen to Urban Sports Say.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
I'm a young money millionaire, tougher than Nigerian hair. My criteria compared to your career just isn't fair. I'm a venereal disease, like a menstrual bleed through the pencil and leak on the sheet of the tablet in my mind. Cause I don't write, cause I ain't got time. Cause my second minutes, hours go to the almighty dollar in the almighty power of that chopper. Sister, brother, son, daughter, father, motherfucker, copper. Got the Maserati dancing on the bridge. Pop it, tell the coppers, ha, you can't catch them, you can't stop them. I go by them goon rules. If you can't beat them, then you pop them. You can't man them, then you mop them. You can't stand them, then you drop them. You pop them, cause we pop them like over red and vodka. Motherfucker, I'm ill. Yeah. A million here, a million.
Back break. Yep. That's my homie. That's the homie.
First, last name,
Whoa, that's the homie. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Wally, Will T, and Ray. Yeah, man, that's the homie. Woj is the homie. All right, it has been reported that the Wizards are ready to offer Raptors president Masai Ujiri $10 million and part ownership. Will T does not believe it, but
Will Bomb.
Do you think? But
Ted Leon says Wizards won't hire a new president outbursts. Before
I know, right?
Dude, it's outburst.
I know,
free
man.
Agency opens. That's a Will Bomb.
What?
That's a Will
Ted
Bomb.
Ted Leon said it?
Yes, Ted Leon said it.
What did Magic get in trouble for a lot?
Tampering.
All right, thank you. Now, so he can't say anything. He's better. He's best off to say that.
But regardless, Teddy Owens ain't looking too strong right now as far as running his basketball team.
He doesn't have the draft.
Come on now. Is 2 days from now,
and you don't have.
They have an interim president.
That's not good enough.
Tommy Shepard is the interim president of basketball operations. How do we know? We aren't inside of those walls, and we aren't able to evaluate. We don't know what Tommy Shepard has contributed to that organization.
You know what, Ernie,
so you shouldn't like him.
But listen, you know what's going on.
Woj bomb.
listen to what I'm saying.
Okay.
Ernie Grunfeld may be briefed, may be given opinion from his scouts, and may be given opinion from Tommy Shepard. We don't know. And it ultimately comes down to leadership. So it's the decisions that Ernie Grunfeld made. Now, I don't know. I'm willing to be unbiased and say maybe Tommy Shepard did contribute to some, did have conversations and gave his opinion, and he was on board with some of those moves. Maybe he wasn't on board with some of those moves, but I'm willing to give him an opportunity. I'm willing to give him a shot.
Okay, let's just throw the hypothetical out there, though. So your jury, if he's interested and there's an ownership stake involved, would you be on board with bringing him on, considering he's made bold moves like trading off Bariani when Bariani was a number one pick? Obviously, the Kawhi move was a bold move. But also, he had those years where they were kind of like the Wizards. Wizards hit their ceiling.
Signed Van Vliet.
He's done some good things. I'm just saying, he's made some bold moves. He's made some good draft picks. Obviously, Siakam and OG and Ananobi are two that stand out. But also, they had years where they were kind of mediocre, right? Where they were just kind of like the Wizards, where they make the first or second round and don't advance. So you got a mixture of, you know, a little bit of Ernie in there, where you like, huh, we're not going nowhere. But he's also made some great moves, and obviously it paid off this year.
And his wife wife went to Eleanor Roosevelt.
I don't care about that.
Africa.
It's fair to say, look, if we look at the record of any GM, we're going to see some hits, some misses, right?
Yeah.
His hits are
good.
Are highlighted now because they just won a championship, right?
Yeah.
Because he made probably one of the boldest moves. He traded for Kawhi Leonard without any assurance that Kawhi Leonard would stay after 1 year, and they won a championship, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know Masai Ujiri's draft record, right? So I don't have that right in front of me. But would I say if he was willing to come to D.C.? Absolutely. I think anything is an improvement. I'm not going to say anything is an improvement.
Hold on.
I'm not saying anything is an improvement over Ernie Grunfeld, because there are a lot of organizations out there that have struggled for a very long time.
Yeah.
But if Masai Ujiri wants to come to D.C., I think you would have to
entertain it. Because it's compensation is going to be involved. It has to be some type of compensation, because he's still under contract.
I don't think it'd be the right move, honestly. He's the hot hand right now, of course. But when the starting five was like Grievous Vasquez
he's gotten his team competitive. They're very competitive.
But the Wizards were competitive.
No, what I mean by that, they choked in the postseason.
And Wall, you know,
but if you look at how he built his team. His team doesn't even have him. Correct me if I'm wrong.
This team doesn't have
a first-round pick.
Yes, on it. Yes.
I mean, that's good work.
He traded away a number of those first-round
picks. Yeah, exactly. That's good.
Let's be fair. Well, so he drafted first-round picks up until this year. He got rid of them because in previous years, they hadn't produced the results that they desired.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, to build a team, that's the goal, right? To build a team. A good team. He's built a solid Toronto Raptors team from before Kawhi. Now, did they choke in the postseason? Yes, they choked in the postseason. But in terms of a solid team,
if you're using that word solid, then Ernie Grunfeld
Ernie's teams, how high did they go in terms of regular season? Toronto was going number one. They were one seed at times, two seeds. They were always the higher seed. They were higher.
Oh, so if you're a number one seed,
no, what I'm saying is that still means you're building a team. That's you're building a better team.
No, I mean, to me, the standard is. The thing that we've become lax as DC sports fan is we don't accept a high standard. We're happy with the playoffs, right? We talk about the Nationals winning the playoff series. Up until the Capitals won the Stanley Cup, it was getting to the Eastern Conference Finals. When we talk about Washington football team, it's an NFC East championship, and a victory in the playoffs. We talk about the Wizards, it's winning a playoff series or two. So our standard has become low. Right. Mm-hmm. So Ray, it's very fair. It's fair what Ray said.
No, that's a good point. I'm not.
You know, and I'm not arguing. I don't think there's no wrong answer. We're just kind of throwing around, would he be a good fit? Again, like you said, anybody right now would seem like upgrade over Ernie. Now, we throw the name Troy Weaver out there. Obviously, he has DC ties.
Mm-hmm.
And Oklahoma City, one good point somebody made to me is even after you lose Harden and you lose KD, you still find a way to be competitive. Still find a way to be competitive. And it shows that.
Competitive.
Yeah, right. I'm just saying, without this, you know, elite talent, you still find a way to make the playoffs. A lot of teams can't do that. Indiana did that this year, but a lot of teams, you lose your best players, you're decimated.
Yeah, it's a lot involved with that coaching too. But yeah,
look at the Wizards. The Wizards lost their best players to injury.
And the key thing, what you say with that, sure, about that OKC thing, OKC is they built it through the draft. That's the thing the Wizards haven't been able to do.
That's
the
true.
Wizards haven't been able to build it through the draft, nope, right? We've had some hits, but we've had far more misses than we have hits. You know, you got
Jan
Wall.
Vesely.
Jan Vesely.
Oh, that was terrible.
Yeah.
That's the name that stands out. But
even last year, Troy Brown was.
It took him a hot. But look how long he was okay.
He's a cool guy. I like him.
I'm not ishing on him. But what I'm saying is, in Washington, outside of Wall, Beal, and possibly Otto Porter Jr., right? Over the last 5 to 7 years. The draft record has been horrible. We haven't been able to hit.
Andre Blatt, you can throw him in there. You can throw JaVale McGee, Nick Young. A lot of guys that Ernie drafted.
What about the dude that used to, Seraphin? I actually like Seraphin.
Kevin Seraphin.
He was good.
A little bit.
Now,
I liked him.
The thing, Will, is in addition to that, you have the poor free agencies. You have the Nicholsons, the Mahimis. You have the Bogdanovich. Some of the trades that Ernie made were like head scratching. Like, really? Or free agent signings. That's what I'm saying. In addition to that, that's what makes it worse. And I think there's nobody else right now that you can say has that type of record.
Just based off of
Danny Ferry,
what he did off of that last what Ernie did that last time when the Wizards were flush with cap space, signing Jan Mahimi, signing all those guys
Andrew to
those
Nicholson,
big Andrew Nicholson, signing all those guys and tying up your cap space. That alone, and then that Bogdanović trade, should have got him fired.
All right, AD is now part of the Lake Show. We'll discuss that after the break. Listen to Urban Sports Inc.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Shed tears as we bury brothers close to heart. What was a friend, now a ghost in the dark. Hard part about it, brother got smoked by a fiend. Turn floss on a blind to a broken man's dream. A hard lesson, cold cases keep them guessing. Plea bargain ain't an option now, so I'm stressing. Cause we're more to be free than a life in the bin. Making money off of cuss words, writing again. Learn how to think ahead, so I fight with my pen. Late night, down sunset, like in the sin. What's the worst they could do to a player? Got me lost in hell. To live and die in LA, on bail, my people say. To live and die in LA.
Living down in LA. You listen to the Urban Sports Team. Will T, Ray Jeezy, Wally. The Lakers have acquired Anthony Davis by trading away Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, and 3 first rounders to the New Orleans Pelicans. I'm going to say New York. How would you assess the trade?
Too much.
I'll let you go, Ray. I'll let you go first.
When I first saw the trade, I immediately texted you guys that I believe they gave up too much. Mm-hmm. Wally came back with a valid point. Well, they're not going to miss the playoffs. Those first round picks won't mean a thing. We don't know that. We're looking at a Golden State team just who are decimated of injuries, and in large part because they played so many games over a span of the last 5 years. LeBron James, I got a lot of mileage. I'm concerned if he can go for an entire 82 on a team that does feature AD now, but who else? We were throwing out names. Quinn Cook, JJ Redick. Now Danny Green's in the mix. Yeah. The people they could sign in addition to Kyle Kuzma, who's with only 5 players under contract right now. You got to build a team. Are you going to be able to build a roster that can sustain – can win for a sustained period without LeBron being 100%. And that's the question. And does AD have that dog in him? Because LeBron James is going to push him. Is he going to be Dwight Howard when Dwight Howard paired with Kobe? Or is he going to be Shaq? Because Shaq believes that Anthony Davis is a young version of himself. But if it were me, I would not have given up that much. Those future picks really hurt, in my opinion.
I agree with Ray. I understand that, you know. No, listen. I understand because of where LeBron is. And it's a more interesting conversation about LeBron and franchise killer that we can be had later
franchise
on.
Franchise killer.
LeBron.
Continue. We talk about that.
I mean, that's a conversation we can have later on. Just looking at this Lakers team, what you've given up.
Mm-hmm.
You can't build a sustainable You can't build a sustainable winner over the long period of time, and here's why: you've given up those three first round picks,
mm-hmm.
so you can't trade first round picks in successive years. So if you're the Lakers, at the trade deadline and you need a shooter or you need a backup point guard, what are you going to give up? You going to give up Kyle Kuzma? Because that's the only other asset you have. Right?
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to be able to sustain this? I understand that LeBron, you know, he's 33. He's going to – this, you know, is now what – some people say is now or never with him.
Mm-hmm.
But when LeBron's gone in I give him 3 or 4 more years, right? I think that's being fair.
Yeah, his contract. The amount of his contract.
Yeah, I give him three or four more years. Yeah. If you're the Lakers, how are you going to sustain winning – after LeBron's gone, you can say that you have Anthony Davis, but the reality is we've seen what Anthony Davis has been able or hasn't been able to do when he was in New Orleans if he doesn't have superior talent around
him. My man Cornelius on our Facebook page posted, if the Lakers win a chip within the next 2 years, they won the trade, but they gave up way too much. Lion Walters posted on Facebook, to be real, the Pelicans won the trade by far. Like I mentioned on the text, I'm over the first round picks, because it's not the NFL. The NFL to me, first rounders are way valuable. If you're regardless of where your position is in the NFL, like your first round pick is way valuable. If you look at in the NBA, the way prospects are valued in terms of the top 13 in the lottery pick, those are the picks that typically are the ones that create impact on your team in terms of the superstar players. If you look at the history of the NBA draft, it's rare that you get a guy past the 13th round that's to be that superstar player. I mean, Kawhi wasn't a lottery pick, I'm correct, right?
13th pick.
Yeah, right at the 13th pick. So it's rare. I'm not going to say you can't do it. It's rare. So where the Lakers plan to finish, if they finish 20 and beyond, like I'm not worried about the first round pick, because to be honest with you, I believe that you can get that type of value in the second round, because a lot of players are almost about that same tier, because you're looking at kids who stayed in college for about 3 years that are at that point in time in the second round. What I will say, though, with Ray's point, though, I do agree with, is that injuries play a part. Now, injuries, if LeBron gets hit with injuries, then I think that, yeah, the Lakers can fall down to, say, not making the postseason, even with Anthony Davis. As much as I like Anthony Davis, I like that team in New Orleans when he had Drew Holiday, him. I think that team was still good enough to make the postseason. They didn't. So if Anthony Davis is by himself with no LeBron throughout the season, then they can definitely not make the postseason. But I think the combination of LeBron and Anthony Davis, I think you have a lot of money in cap space to sign. If you wanted Kemba Walker. If you can get Kemba. If you want to get Kyrie, there's word that Kyrie is now considering to come to LA. For me, I'm spreading the money out, though. I do like what you said, Will T, about filling out the roster rather than going with the superstar player. I mentioned J.J. Redick, Brooke Lopez, because, again, you got space
on your board. You're going to have to give J.J. Redick something crazy.
But you still have – it's better than giving the max. You're still spreading it out. You're not giving J.J. Redick Kemba Walker money. You're not giving J.J. Redick Kyrie Irving money. You could still spread it out. Like, you can sign JJ. You can sign Brook Lopez. That still equals what? That's two players that you get to fill out your roster. Then you can sign, say, a Jabari Parker to come off your bench if you wanted to. Like, there's things you can do to fill in your roster. That's all I'm saying. Like, you don't have to sign the third big piece. Like, a lot of people want the big three. Like, they're fascinated with the big three. You don't need to. Kawhi showed you. You don't have to. Kawhi showed you, just give me a team. And everybody, a perfect fit. That's what makes the Warriors work. It's not because they have Klay. It's not because if Klay was a different type of player, it wouldn't work. If Steph was a different type of player, it wouldn't work. It works because everything works together. Klay moves great without the basketball. Steph can move without the basketball, and he can be ball dominant. KD's an ISO player. You have the Draymond, who does everything you want in a utility player. He passes the ball. He can play the point four. It's a perfect constructed team. That's why it works. So if the Lakers can create a perfect constructed team that defends, that's important. You have to defend. They can compete.
It's going to be open next year, wide open next year. Yeah. Although the Nuggets are going to be better next year.
Oh, I love the Nuggets. That's a team.
The Blazers are going to get better next year.
See, I don't know about
that. And I think the Kings are going to get better next year.
I don't know
so
about
it. So it may not be as easy. But you got right now CP3 asking for a trade. His contract is huge, though. But the Lakers
allegedly,
have the money to sign
supposedly.
Yeah, I know. Allegedly. Supposedly. I will say, though, I do like New Orleans squad, though. Don't get it twisted. Like I love the Ball Zion connection.
Well,
run the floor. I like the
if they get Bill tomorrow, it's gonna be.
They're not getting Bill. I don't believe it. I don't believe that.
We can discuss that when we talk draft talk. We'll discuss it.
Yeah, we'll discuss that after break. Listen to Urban Sports saying.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T.
Starting over.
The Wally, Ray Jeezy. Check out the Football Garbage Time podcast at www.footballgarbagetime.com. It's a great show. Make sure you check them out. The NBA draft goes down Thursday. Who should the Washington Wizards draft with the 9 spot?
Well, if we're talking about just the number 9, because again, some trades might happen or a trade.
We're talking about
just
the 9, man.
Okay, just the 9. So obviously, you look at all these mock drafts. Sekou Doumbouya is out there. His name. We don't know nothing about him except we watched some YouTube clips. This dude from France that they talking about drafting. He's projected to be the next Pascal Siakam.
I don't pay attention. I'm going to lie to you. I'm a racist. I don't pay attention to overseas basketball players.
That's not
How is that racist?
It's not racist. Prejudice, sorry.
Yes,
but prejudice. As I mentioned, I tweeted yesterday. I responded to your tweet. I said Rui Hachimura from Gonzaga.
He's not a top.
Is he that high
on the board?
He's projected to go 12th right now.
Okay,
but I feel like as far as the way basketball is going, he would be a nice stretch four type of player, and he's athletic. He'll dunk on you. He blocks shots. He can shoot
a little bit. He can shoot. But he can shoot mid-range. He has a good mid-range
shot. He can shoot better than Zion.
Yeah. He can. I'm arguing that.
And Zion's going number one.
It's hard. He was a junior, right?
I believe he's a senior, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't think you take – I think you get – if you have an opportunity – it's just my opinion.
No, it's cool.
It's cool, right? I would take – I mentioned him during the break. I'll take Bobo before I take – that's too much upside. Bobo has too much upside over
I wouldn't be mad at that. I wouldn't be mad at that at all. I'm just, like you said, your opinion is my opinion.
I know. We both have opinions.
Boy, Mayweather said everybody's opinion.
No, my opinion, I would take Nazir Little from UNC.
Yeah, I heard he's been compared to Clay, right?
He might go before.
That's what I heard, too. I heard he's moving up, too.
I mean, I like Nazir Little and... the guy you mentioned, Bobo. I think if you're at Wizards, you're number 9, you have to make some calls, see, hey, is anyone interested?
Yeah.
And if they are interested, maybe you move back and you need to accumulate more assets.
Uh-huh.
And you know, if Nazir Little isn't there, I drop outside the draft and then outside the lottery and I...
And you
go with Bobo.
Can you
I told the Wizards last year, Mitchell Robinson. Draft Mitchell Robinson.
The Knicks like him a lot now.
I liked him before. Looks told like him at like 13 or 14 when they had the opportunity to get Mitchell Robinson. If you had Mitchell Robinson, you have your center for the next 10 or 15 years.
They get Bobo, though.
They should have got Robert Williams last year.
I think so, too. That's what she got Robert Williams. But I think they get Bobo. It's a good –
Bobo.
it's a good market. In terms of
to beat
– he's marketable.
It's like to beat
because of Manu Bol. He's marketable. He's marketable. In his area. Yeah,
but like Ray said during the break, there are some.
I'm joking. I knew I was going to trigger you. Go ahead, Will. My bad.
All African players don't play like.
I'm just joking. Though Tabi was tall and block shots. It don't matter where you from. Got Brent from UMES that was tall.
But with Bobo, if there are the injury concerns.
For real, one injury. Wally, he's big, but he but
one
he's
injury. Are we really but, doing this though?
No, but he has a thin. He has.
Why
a
we
very
not talking about Michael
frame.
Porter Jr. then? Michael Porter was is injury.
He's
prone,
way
right?
more skilled than Bobo is.
Bobo was dropping 20 before he got hurt.
You should be. It's like Shaq's son was dropping 20.
I don't care. In no, I'm talking about in college. He was dropping 20 before he got hurt.
Yeah, I know. He averaged 26 points.
Oh, he in college. He was dropping 20 in college.
Again,
I'm just saying.
I feel
we're
he
not.
Be, he's skilled, though. But I, you,
why are we acting like.
I think the athleticism and the longevity scale.
Man, Oregon would be would have been. Going
the only thing that scares me, and this is kind of
it's hypothetical too.
It is. So go ahead.
The only thing that scares me about when I see him, there's another guy that when I see him, I see Greg Oden. The way they walk similar with that kind of hitch, and we know that Greg Oden had that microfracture thing that kept. That kept him out
Oden
of
was bigger though.
Greg Oden.
In terms of girth, I'm not talking about.
Yeah, in terms of girth, but yeah. If you look at them, both of them had
their gait. You're trying to talk about like the way they walked.
Yeah, their gait, and they both had foot problems when they were younger, and those foot problems usually don't transition very well when That's you become fair. Older and you're that big.
That's fair. I mean, I don't know.
If this was a Poland or if this was the Poland family, I would suspect Bo would
why
be probably
would
a little more
why
favorite.
Would Cleveland take Kobe White when they got now? See, I can't deal with.
No, this is just a mock draft, sir.
I can't deal with.
Don't respond.
I can't.
But Kobe White can play. Kobe White can play both. He can play point guard and
he's a better
guard.
He's got good size.
Yeah, but he's a better point guard.
He's 6'5".
He's an ideal point guard in today's NBA.
He's like Gilbert Arenas.
That's like ruining. See, I hate that. That's why you mess up kids when they come to the NBA. But anyway, yeah, like the Wizards. I mean, the Wizards have. I mean, if Cam Reddish slips, I mean, that's a player.
Stay away from him.
We don't like Cam Reddish. I like Cam.
It's a mentality thing.
He's got NBA range, man.
He's got NBA range.
He doesn't have that mentality.
No,
Will. Will.
No, if you're the Wizards, no. Just listen to me. If you're the Wizards,
short opinion.
It's my opinion. This is my opinion, right? If you're the Wizards. You're at a point in your franchise. This is a pivotal pick because this is the pick that you have to kind of tilt and kind of reconstruct and build. This is a guy who will be pivotal for you going forward. Cam Reddish has shown me through when he was at Duke that he just doesn't have the mentality. He doesn't have that mentality. Is he highly skilled? Absolutely. But the kid just doesn't have that mentality to take over and become an elite player. If you ask me, from what I saw,
I mean Darius Garland. That's what I like, but it could go either way with him. But I feel like Duke is why he didn't shine last year, based on who he was playing with and based in the system he was playing in.
It's hard. Everybody can't eat.
In high school, he destroyed RJ Barrett, destroyed him. You know, and then you go on his team, and obviously you're the third option. Some games, the fourth option.
Yeah, I mean it's hard. It's not easy.
But Will. What was it at Louisville? Did you not see them when they were down 20?
And when he came,
and he took over with Zion on the bench, and he was hitting from like I'm gonna call it Dame time range.
Was the game winner he hit against?
That was
Florida
at Louisville,
State?
Florida State.
Yeah, was that the Florida State game he hit a game winner? That game winning three?
I did.
Maybe it was Louisville. I think you're right. It's Louisville.
That I
is
didn't
Louisville.
See that, but I will
I know
say
you
with,
that's
no,
why
no,
I was about
no,
to
no,
call
but you. But did you see when Zion was out and his. Inability or his lack of desire to take over games.
He was sick at the time.
I don't care.
The game that Zion had the shoe explode. He wasn't even in the lineup that night.
No, but I'm saying
from that point on, when Zion lacked
a desire to take over and be the star and step into Zion's shoes. That's a mentality thing. I don't want that type of mentality.
Coach K, that wasn't him. Coach K put the ball in RJ's hands.
Yeah,
like,
RJ,
That wasn't his fault. I never seen Coach K coach a worse year than I have this year.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I'm not saying he could totally be like many Duke guys and not show up. He can go down with Gerald Henderson and the other and
or he be like,
Trajan Langdon and the rest of the list of Duke people who don't show up in the league. But what I'm saying is, I feel like he hasn't been given a fair opportunity to show to showcase his talent based on who he was playing with and who he was playing for.
The best player in the draft is Ja Morant. I just wanted to say that. That's all. In this draft. I just wanted to say that. Y'all can continue now.
It's almost time for Armand Lee, baby. I ain't going overtime.
Ja Morant's the
overtime
best.
Overtime with the USS.
Ja Morant is the best player in
Darius
the draft.
Darius Garland got game. He got game. He's going to be like that Kyrie, Jamal Crawford, got his career cut short. and then get to show
everything.
Everything.
All right, man. Is Tyson Fury the best heavyweight in the world? Quarterly Reports, Armand Lee will join us after the break to discuss this. You listen to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Ain't that dumb.
I would like
to. Come on, man. And with the local DBC news, LL Cool J with a triumphant comeback. More a solo. But tonight,
don't call it a comeback.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T. Ray and myself, Wally. Right now, I cue this in correctly. Right now, we had the homie Armand Lee on the line. He's the host of the Quarterly Report podcast. What's going on, Armand?
Hey, man, what's going on, y'all?
We're good, man.
What's up, brother?
What's going on, brother? How you feeling?
Man, chilling.
All right. Subdued Armand Lee. We got to get you hype right now.
We're going to work on that, Armand. We're going to get you hype. We're going to work on it. All right. We're going to work on it, man. I know you're upset that the Knicks, you know, things are going on with the Knicks. We're going to get you hype, though. We're going to get you hype. All
right. I'm hurt right now, man. I'm super hurt right now.
All right. Lineal heavyweight champion Tyson Fury, TKO, Tom Schwartz in the second round. Right now, is Fury the best heavyweight in the world?
I mean, I feel so. Look, Wally, you and I have talked about this personally. I thought even with the knockdown, which was just a complete just lack of focus and really just, I really don't know what Tyson Fury or his corner was telling him when he fought Deontay Wilder, but that last knockdown in the 12th round, I still thought Fury won that fight.
Yeah, agreed.
And even if you don't think he won the fight, right? Let's say you are comfortable with a draw. The idea that Tyson Fury got knocked down twice and you think that it was cool to be a draw lets you know all you need to know about what really happened throughout that fight, right?
So
I think that when he fought Tyson, or when he fought Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury, remember, that was only his second fight in like 3 years. That he was able to do that to Deontay Wilder in his prime, I think that there is no doubt that Tyson Fury is the better boxer. I mean, I don't think even the biggest Deontay Wilder fan would argue who's the better boxer. So, as it stands right now, especially obviously coming off of AJ's loss, I think you would have to go Fury 1, Wilder 2, and then that third spot. Though I still think AJ, if he can get his head together, he's right up there in the mix. You got to go over Ruiz just by just the way in which he beat Anthony Joshua.
Not King Kong Ortiz. I'll put him number 3.
Oh no, I don't think Ortiz would beat Usyk, to be honest with you.
Ooh.
And I think he's the wild card. I think we all talked about this a few weeks back. Everyone makes it like, you know, even before AJ's loss, it was, you know, AJ, Deontay, Fury, and I think obviously Usyk hasn't fought in heavyweight class yet. But the more he fights, he gets under his belt. I'm not convinced that he wouldn't be the best fighter. Even before Anthony Joshua lost, I thought that Usyk would be able to give him some issues. And when it comes to just boxing, again, we haven't seen him at this class yet. But he's a cruiserweight, so it's not like he was fighting little guys, right? I think he has the potential to be the best fighter in the heavyweight division.
Armand, the blessing in all this is, by all accounts, by all indications, we'll get a chance to settle this argument next year because these guys are probably going to fight. I feel like right now Dominic Brazil was a higher quality opponent than Tom Schwartz, and he knocked him unconscious. Tom Schwartz, I don't know what his intentions was, but it wasn't to come to box.
Right.
That was nothing but a Bob Arum coming out party for Top Rank and Tyson Fury with all the antics and the Living in America nonsense. I was personally annoyed by all that. I just feel like right now, Deontay Wilder is number one, just based on the violent nature in what he fights and how he knocks people out. And really, I feel like Fury did not see the best Deontay Wilder that night based on Deontay Wilder, his camp, how that went. So I'm thinking a rematch will settle all arguments.
Well, so here's my thing, right? And your points are valid, but number one, if Deontay Wilder couldn't get up for that fight, like again, we understand why Fury would not be at his best. Again, it was only his second 3 years, right? So that is a built-in excuse, and you can call it an excuse, and that's fine, right?
Sure.
But I don't know why Wilder, at that point, his only pay-per-view fight, his only fight in Las Vegas, his main eventing, if he's not up for that fight, I don't know why. I don't know what's wrong with him. You know what I mean? Like that's the fight that same way when we talk about Anthony Joshua, right? I don't know why Anthony Joshua was so lackadaisical for fighting Andy Ruiz. That was his big coming out party. If you're telling me that people are saying that Deontay Wilder could not get up for Tyson Fury, who even to this day is the biggest fight of his career, that worries me. And then when we talk about, look, you're right. This past Saturday, it was a tailor-made, hey, we're going to put an Uber driver in there versus, you know, Tyson Fury. Exactly. And he's going to look really, really good. He's going to look amazing against a guy who everyone knows is not even an afterthought would be to be a positive spin on it, right? He's not a capable fighter. But I would then counter, it's like, okay, name me the guys that Deontay Wilder has beaten. The fighters who are worse than them, right? And yes, obviously Luis Ortiz would be number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then where are you going? You know what I'm saying? Because Tyson Fury, say what you will about him, we've seen him beat legit top fighters before. We haven't seen that from Deontay Wilder. I don't know why Wilder never fought Klitschko. I wish I could talk to Deontay Wilder right now and be like, bro, why is it that you never wanted to smoke with Vlad? You know, because AJ did, so did Tyson. You know, I don't know why Deontay never wanted to fight White. I still don't know why he doesn't want to fight him, right? Again, all of these questions are things that I would love to know. But again, when you look at Deontay, there's only so many times you can beat, you know, Staverns and the Areolas. Like, at some point, you do have to beat guys who are legit contenders. And as it stands right now, and there's a lot of blame to go around, I'm not saying that this is solely Wilder's problem, right? And I'm not saying that Wilder is ducking any of these guys. I don't think it's that simple. But as it stands, he lacks when it comes to competition, particularly as you look around the rest of the heavyweight division.
I will say this. I really can't argue with that right now, but I think you were on last week or the week before last where you talked about boxing. It was before last week because we were talking about how AJ didn't go to the jab. I will say I think Fury might be the best pure boxer of all the heavyweights. Like, I feel like he has the best skill set, and he knows how to break a fighter down better than a Deontay Wilder. I definitely agree with that.
For sure.
And there's no arguments there for me. I just feel like, again, the great thing is it looks like we're going to be able to settle this because they're going to fight, hopefully, as long as everybody takes care of business.
Well, the question was who's the best boxer,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I guess if we go off based off skills, what they've shown in the ring, then Tyson Fury is light years, head and shoulders above every other heavyweight, right?
Yeah.
Just based off of basic boxing skills.
Yeah. Right, right.
But it's just not based off of boxing skill. It's based off of a mentality, a willingness to go in there, put it out on the line, exchange and throw and take a punch to give a
deliver
punch,
to
right?
Take, deliver and take.
So I think Tyson Fury is by far the most skilled fighter. But if you had to ask me who wins,
if we get this fight in March,
I definitely think that it's going to be Deontay Wilder, because Deontay Wilder will seize and take those opportunities to deliver that one devastating punch that could potentially knock out Tyson Fury.
I mean, that sounds cool, right? And I really don't want to come across as a guy who hates Deontay Wilder. I'm a fan of Deontay Wilder. I'm more frustrated with Deontay Wilder for some of the issues that we talked about in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But Deontay Wilder has a chin. Like, we've seen it more so in the Ortiz fight than the Wilder or Fury fight. Fury is not a big-time puncher.
Yeah.
But we've also seen that Tyson Fury take two big time shots, shots that other guys do not get up from.
And get up, and again, yeah. Get up like the Undertaker.
He got up. And again, so important to remember. This thing, most people, it's even after being knocked down twice, he won the fight. Like, I think if we are being honest,
yeah,
right?
He won the fight, yeah.
If Tyson Fury were to have just been like De La Hoya versus Tito and just ran around the ring in that 12th round, he would have won.
Yeah.
The only thing that got him jammed up is the fact, and if you look at that final knockdown, Fury with the quick hands, tapped three times, then he puts his hands down and stood in front of Wilder. And Wilder was like, dog, you don't know I got lightning bolts in these gloves? And laid him down. I don't know. Tell him, look, there's no reason for you to exchange with him. Deontay Wilder is the best puncher in the entire sport.
Mm-hmm.
Tyson Fury is a very capable boxer. He is a very talented boxer, but he is not a big-time puncher.
Yeah.
I don't know what he was thinking in that 12th round. I don't know what he was thinking. Like, it makes no sense. But again, that goes back to, it was his second fight in 3 years. Look, man, maybe Deontay Wilder finally puts it all together. I have been waiting for Wilder to live up to his full potential, not just as a great athletic puncher, but as a puncher who can set up his great punches with the jab, with the straight, can feint, can work the body, can use his athleticism the way that you look at Deontay Wilder, you're like, bro, you don't look like any of the heavyweights. You should be spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a spectacular puncher. But, like, he should be so much better, and I don't know if he has it yet, you know?
Mm-hmm. So we were supposed to talk – actually, we have to probably end the show. We were supposed to talk about the Mikey Garcia, Danny Garcia fight too, but I'm going to hold that on for next week. I'm going to hold that off for next week. Cause that's a lot.
You sure, man? Because I'm geeked up about that.
You geeked up about it? All right, man. You know what? Because you geeked, we're going to talk about it. So all right, it's been reported that Mikey Garcia will be fighting Danny Garcia at 147 August 31st. That's the reported date. What are your thoughts on that fight? And it's supposed to be pay-per-view.
Yeah, I think it should be a pay-per-view fight. I think every time Danny fights, he usually fights on Showtime or wherever the basic channel, whether it's PBC on Fox or PBC on CBS.
Mm-hmm.
He always draws well. From Philadelphia fighter, Puerto Rican, got the good looks, man. You know, is a talented fighter, has some really big time wins, and is an exciting fighter. So he does well. Never been on pay-per-view as a headliner. And then obviously, when you see what Mikey did versus Spence, y'all know how much I love Spence.
Yeah.
But you also have to give Mikey credit. He brings an entire Mexican fan base. He's probably the second, maybe third, depending on how you feel. His name escapes me, but probably the second or third biggest Mexican boxer in the sport. So, yeah, you run it back, see what you do have in Mikey, particularly considering how every time you see Mikey, he looks like he's closing up more and more with his own.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure Al Haymon is like, all right, man, let me do what I have to do to make sure he's happy. So I'm super excited about this fight, but I'm so happy that Mikey is staying at 147 for a lot of different reasons. I think there are a lot of really potential exciting fights at 147.
Mm.
But I also don't like how people just kind of dismiss how amazing Errol was at 147 when he fought Mikey.
I know.
The excuse for, well, Mikey moved up to class. Errol was, he was cerebral with how he destroyed Mikey, right?
Yeah.
So when you see Mikey fight other top 147 fighters, I do think Mikey will beat Danny. I think it goes back to, like, I see people's top 5 pound for pound, and they still don't have steps. And I'm like, all right, bro, at some point, we just got to stop this whatever it is that's going on with Spence and the masses. We got to really break it down and be like, dog, they're not three or four fighters who are better than him. There's no reason why Spence shouldn't be in everybody's top five. And the more people see Mikey do well at 147, hopefully that means that people will then have a greater appreciation at just how dominant he was, Spence was, when he fought Mikey earlier this year.
I personally wanted to see Mikey move back down, fight Lomachenko.
Me too.
And then let Danny let Danny Garcia fight the winner of the Pacquiao fight, which should be one time. And the winner
He's not beating Pacquiao.
The winner of the one-time Garcia fight would then get Errol. That's what my desire was to see. I think it's totally doable. Lomachenko, Mikey would be his best test. And I think Mikey was just too small in addition to Errol just being great that night.
I agree with you, Ray. No, hold on, Errol. Armand, I agree with you, Ray. Mikey Garcia is a strong fighter. Mikey Garcia is one of the better technical fighters, right? Mm-hmm. Has great, he has pretty good head movement, has, and you know, he can execute a game plan. But against Errol, you know, at 147, his body just looks smallish and looks soft. I want to see him at least go down to 140. I think 140 would be, if he can't make lightweight anymore, I think 140 would be a good fit for him. At 147, he looks too small. He just doesn't mm-hmm. lack, he, and, he do, and he lacks punching power.
Yeah. Well, see, this is kind of my point when it comes back to Errol, and I don't want to take away from Mike. Every welterweight looks nuts beside Errol in the ring. All of them. You know what I'm saying? When Kell fought him, you looked at it like, dog, you don't. The fact that Spence still makes 147 is nuts. He's not a welterweight in body size. And it looks like he just gets stronger and stronger and growing into his body. But look at Bud. If Bud and Errol are in the ring together, you're going to look at one of them like, hold on now. You know what I'm saying? That's mm-hmm. not to take anything away from Bud. I think it's literally a coin toss who would win between those two. Mm-hmm. But Bud's body doesn't look like Spence's. Danny's body doesn't look like Spence's. Sean is a big dude, right? Mm-hmm. Sean is a big, looks like a, you know, a relative, like a football running back type of deal. Yeah. But when you put him beside Spence, it don't look right, right? There's no one fighting at 147 mm-hmm. if you want to put him in a ring beside Spence. That's going to look like, hold on, you, all of them dudes look nuts. You know what I'm saying? Standing beside him. So I don't think that it's a fair barometer mm-hmm. for Mikey to be like, dog, you moved up and you looked kind of, you didn't look strong. You didn't look like you were into it versus Spence. Mm-hmm. Number one, it was his first fight at 147 and he jumped up 2 weight classes. But I do think because Mikey is so tall and Mikey is rangy and he knows how to fight from a distance, that I do think he could provide a lot of these guys at 147 some real, real headaches. I am with you guys. Ultimately, if we could get Lomachenko, Mikey, sign me up, right? Sign me up for yesterday for that.
Yeah, man.
But,
yeah,
you know, Aram ain't doing it. Aram ain't stuck. Aram got 3 guys right now, and he just put Fury to the Lions. Like, we don't know what's going to happen with Fury versus Deontay. So, he got 2 guys left, and we know how Aram will milk that cow until there's no drops left. And I don't think that we can see Lomachenko versus Mikey anytime soon.
Because there's nobody for Lomo to fight in Aram's, you know, brand that can even. I think he's wasting Lomo for real. He's just wasting Lomo. I feel bad for Lomo.
Well, I mean, Lomo hasn't fought bad fights yet. Like, we may get to the point where it's like, okay, there's nobody left for Lomachenko to fight. But as it stands, he's fought the best. Like, that's one of the reasons why I think Lomachenko is number one. Mm-hmm. New Wave is definitely now knocking on the door. Mm-hmm. But Lomachenko, there hasn't been a dud that he's been in the ring against.
Yeah.
You know, he's mowed down the top of the best. And, you know, I mean, you know, y'all had Gary on the show last week.
Mm-hmm.
But Loma fought Gary. You know what I'm saying? Loma fought everybody. Like, there isn't a person who Loma hasn't fought.
That is true. That's true. I mean, I just feel bad. I feel bad for him. I feel there's better fights and just, you know, he leaves Aram, but that's just me.
For sure. But I mean, that's the main problem with boxing, right?
Mm-hmm.
We all of us can sit down and break it down and chop it up. Be like, okay, this guy needs to fight him. He needs to fight him. And then after that, he needs to fight him. Bop, 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 bop. But that's the sport, man. It's like, as much as we love the sport, it has so many issues that keeps it from being as great as it could be.
No, I totally agree. Hey, Armand, before I let you go, my man, let our listeners know about the pod, because that's the most important, and also how they can catch you on social media.
Yes, sir, man. So we took a break off this week, but we're back each and every Tuesday. Quarterly Report Podcast is the name. Check me out on Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, and iTunes, man. We talk about sports, boxing, basketball, pop culture, man, movies, music, the whole nine, man. We do sports with all the flavor. You know, we season the sports here, man. We ain't like them lame radio stations with no seasoning, man. We got all the seasons, all the spices on the pod. So check me out. Quarterly Report Podcast. And make sure you follow me on Twitter at Quarterly Show. That's Q-U-A-R-T-E-R-L-E-E Show. And follow me personally on Twitter at Armand, A-R-M-O-N _Lee, L-E.
Hey, Armand, thanks again, man, for being on.
Hey, man, anytime, man. Y'all know what it is.
All right, my man. All right, stay blessed, man.
Yeah, please.
That's my man, Armand Lee, host of the Quarterly Report Podcast. So make sure you check him out. you know, subscribe to them on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, all that good stuff that podcasts are being sold or being downloaded. All right, it's time to wrap this show up. Everybody's good? I guess so. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hey, Mega, lead us out big, homie.